All right, we've got the iPhone and Apple Watch event to discuss. It's Thursday morning. The keynote was Wednesday morning to afternoon, depending on where you live. And so far, I've seen the keynote as it unfolded, and we were covering it, and then a little bit. I rewatched the watch segment, but not the phone segment yet. So, or in completion. So we'll take a stab at this and kind of share our thoughts, and maybe next week we'll have more to say. But I kind of want to cut to the chase first. Mayo, are you buying anything from this event? And if so, what?
Yeah, I'll buy the new watch.
Okay.
The phone, we can discuss it, but it's nice. It's okay, but I think if you're not interested in the max size, it's like there's no immediate pressure for anything in particular.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas watches, bigger screen, new design, even the heart rate stuff is like cool, but the EKG isn't even available in my country. But for me, like, all you need is like the new design, the new watch face layouts and stuff like that, and that's pretty good.
Yeah. Which watch would you get then?
Probably the same as always, Space Gray Sport.
Yeah, Space Gray Aluminum, and then you always get the smaller size, right?
Yeah, and that's actually a thing now, because 40 millimeters is encroaching big. I don't know. We'll have to see how that one plays out. It's not... Because I wore 42 millimeter watches to try them, and they definitely felt way too big for my arm. So,
right.
I'm hoping this will be like a nice in between, but a little nervous about that, because I would just be ordering it sight unseen anyway.
Yeah, it will ensure band compatibility for you, though, right? With 38 millimeter bands.
Yeah. Yeah, the bands work.
Yeah. What do you have? Like one black and then one gray.
Well, I actually sold my Series Zero, so I only have one gray at the moment.
Oh, okay. Which may get sold too then, I guess.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. All right, so you're down for one watch and zero phones. Me, I'm definitely going to get a watch, as we'll discuss. The discontinuation of the edition caught me off guard, because I was ready to... What would the Series 3 one cost? Like $1,350 or something like that? Like, I was down to spend that on the white ceramic edition, but in the Series 4 design, and then that doesn't exist. So now I've been caught off guard. And honestly, like, as of this morning, because I don't know, I wasn't like already decided. Now I've got to like rethink this. But I'm leaning on stainless steel gold with the gold Milanese, and then like probably using a sport band. Like they don't offer a black sport band with a gold pen. They only offer like a pebble colored sport band with a gold pen. But I'd love if there was a black one, like the original gold editions had that combination. So that's what I'm thinking on the watch for now. And I keep, but because I've had silver steel and space black steel before, and even with the new screen design, like it doesn't seem that different, and I want to feel like it's a fresh new watch, like I was going to get with a white ceramic that I haven't had before. And then on the phone side, I mean, part of my justification is like I've suddenly freed up like about half of what I was going to spend on a watch. And with the phone, I do a monthly payment with AT&T Next 12, where you upgrade every year, you turn in your old phone. And I'm not like solid yet, but if I were to upgrade, it would be one of the Max models. Probably in the space gray color, space black or space gray color, and not with the 512 gigabyte like whopper of a price one. I don't think, probably not. So, or I might just keep my 10 for another year. The thing about that is, like, I think my monthly bill doesn't change until the next year when this phone's paid off, and then I only benefit from that if I don't also get next year's phone. Like, I need to really sit out on upgrading to get a benefit here with the plan that I'm on. So I'm kind of on a cycle that even with like a slow, not super compelling upgrade year, it makes sense to upgrade it anyway. So I'll report back what I do next week. But as you can imagine, I'll probably upgrade. So we'll see.
Probably.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the event. Before it started, like we've had a lot of leaks, we had the watch image and the iPhone image, And then at the morning before the of the event, the morning of the event, the sitemap, what was it, like the HTML or XML of the sitemap leaked. And
yeah,
it was quite telling him like what you should expect. And that was the first sign of like no ceramic edition because it wasn't listed in the like description URLs for everything that was going to be in the store.
Yeah, like this sitemap was updated before the store went down. And this website, which I hadn't heard of before, called allthings.how, very out of the blue, got a copy of what it looked like before it was pulled. And it, what a sitemap is it's kind of like an old technology, really, on the web. Like, back in the day when Google wasn't very good, they would recommend that you make a big page that basically just links to every important website so the crawlers can find all the stuff to actually look at. And it was one of those things in like the late 90s stuff where SEO, you've got to have a sitemap because otherwise the crawlers might not find all your pages. And modern era, like, they're completely irrelevant. But for some reason, Apple still maintains one, and it listed out every iPhone model that they sold, along with all the iPads and everything like that. But obviously, you can diff the sitemap that was updated to the one that wasn't and quickly see what had changed.
Yeah.
And so it leaked like all the XS configurations, the XR name, the sizes, all the names of the colors, the watches. Like the whole shamboozle was out there in the morning, so we rushed around putting up quite a few stories like covering that stuff, and
yeah.
So that kind of set off the morning like six hours before the actual event started.
Yeah, I awoke to that. Like, I wake up at around 5:30 to get the kids ready for school, and like, so I woke up to that already being a thing, and it was like, wow, what more can possibly leak? Like, you know, and then right before the event started, I'd say like 11 minutes before event time, Tim Cook had a tweet that, for all we knew, was a DM fail. And it said, no, period, who can get it here quickly, ? And it was tweeted from my phone. And my guess was that someone who runs Tim Cook's, like, who has access to his account, like, I think, I'm pretty sure he has access to it. He used to tweet, you could tell because of weird formatting, in that infamous blurry picture from a football game. But since then, it's been much more polished, so you can imagine that someone on marketing communications has access to it. And so my guess was someone sent a message from the wrong app, and it happened to be Tim Cook's Twitter account. Like, you know, whether it was a DM fail or a text message fail, like, something happened. And then the tweet went away, and it was just like, wow, all these leaks, and now a DM fail, and like, this is just really not polished. And then came the intro video for the event, which was like, you know, I guess Mission Impossible style of a girl, I think her name was Amy in the video, who was tasked with getting a sealed briefcase to the event. And it was immediately clear, like, oh, that was like theater. and it's so interesting because, like, and it turns out, like, the whole point of that was to get the clicker that he uses to progress the slides in the keynote to the event. And it was like all a stunt just to play into that video. And I think it went so smooth.
Yeah, teleporting Kevin Lynch in the middle of it.
Yeah, I think it went so smoothly, like, on rewatching it, of like, now that you know what's happening and like the whole thing, it's like, oh, that was transitioned so smoothly from like the scene where Tim Cook receives the clicker and then walks on stage with it up in the air. It's like, it was very well done.
It's like when they did the Carpool Karaoke intro and he came on wearing the glasses. Like,
exactly.
Same kind of theme. They seem to somehow manage to do something. At the moment, they love doing these, like, funky intros. Before, you just have this, like, we love design. 1,000 no's for every yes, that was a video, and then they just walk on and pretend like nothing happened. Recently, they like doing these intro videos that kind of have some connection to the start, just to, like, ease you into it. I think they're funny. Like, they're kind of stupid as well. Like, it's definitely not as professional, you know, the typical, like, professional Apple line, but they take some leeway here and there. People want whimsy. I guess this counts as whimsy, so it's fine, I think.
Yeah, the only thing that gets me about it, like, historically looking back at it, is that the Twitter, like, the tweet was deleted, and it was in no way referenced, like, as Tim Cook came out. He wasn't like, gotcha or anything, which is probably, like, the smoothest way to do it and, like, to minimize the effect, you know, the humor without taking it too far. But it's like, you had to be on Twitter or like read coverage of this happening to get that part of the whole thing. And it was, so in that way, it's kind of an Easter egg. But it wasn't referenced in the video or at the event. So like, if you missed Tim Cook's tweet, then you didn't get that part of it. It was kind of like a bonus. And it holds up on its own just fine.
Yeah.
It's just like enhanced by if you saw the tweet go out and then like were punked by it for, you know, several minutes.
And the connection to Twitter extended this year because this is the first time that they've streamed the event on anywhere but Apple's own website. They actually used Twitter's events thing so you could actually watch it on Twitter itself, like, as well as on Apple. So there was probably like some fun collaboration they thought there and just slipped it in.
Yeah, so I thought that was very well done. Looking more at the video, everyone has emailed us to say, did you notice that the girl in the video says, hey, and then Siri to activate Siri through her AirPods without raising her wrists and talking to the Apple Watch or pulling out an iPhone because she didn't have a free hand with an iPhone in it. And at first, like my first thing was like, oh, maybe they are teasing, you know, an AirPods update with that rumored feature where the AirPods always listen for that phrase. But then clearly that didn't happen. You know, maybe it was intended to. But I think you could probably cut that up to, you know, like the magic of film and like, they just cut corners in like the in what they show.
Yeah, like it almost feels like a coincidence to me that is a rumored feature, and then we see it here because like in all their films they cut weird corners, like Apocalypse, all the icons just vanish on the screen with this, and that's, you know, it's not really what happens if the internet went down. Like, like the app icons wouldn't disappear. Like they take all the creative licenses for like the fun of it, and it was kind of awkward in that it is something that is very much rumored. But I know, like, the meme at the moment is Apple's so rough and ready that they keep making all these, like, blunders. Somehow, I think if that was their intention, they would have definitely had that cut out. Like, I think people kind of, like, jumped on that because we'd already come off the, oh, Apple screwed up with the DM file. So it was like, oh, look, Apple's messing up again only 1 minute later. Like, there was definitely a getting on the bandwagon. I really doubt that is, like, an actual hint of something new, especially as the AirPods with Hey Telephone, whatever you want to call it, aren't now like even back a month ago they were starting to be rumored like well into 2019.
Yeah,
like the only thing that seems to be coming at the end of this year maybe is the charging case that will come alongside AirPower presumably, which again radio silence there. Like the actual AirPods 2 update isn't necessarily on the cards, even close to being ready. So to me, that was just like a creative flair and not representative.
She also fills all three of her activity rings, which would require 12 hours of standing, and this is in California where it was like 9:50 a.m. And so the only way that'd be possible really is if she was like also in China earlier in the day, like somewhere on the Eastern Hemisphere, and then flew.
And she asked Siri to work out the shortest route around Apple Park and then goes a really protracted long route regardless.
Yeah, and like you said, Kevin Lynch teleports with his watch, which I don't think they announced yesterday.
I didn't see it on the slide.
Yeah, he did unlock the door with his watch, which I think they probably do have at Apple Park, because you can use that at universities and hotels in some way, I guess. So I thought it was a nice video, especially like the next time I watched it when it was all, oh, I get it now, and it's just entertainment. I thought it was a good production. So,
and then Cook came out and basically said retail's doing great, didn't really go into any details, and specifically mentioned that they're going to talk about two products today, dispelling any of the speculation about iPads or Macs or anything like that.
Yeah. Which made us think they wouldn't get to HomePod, which they eventually did, sort of. But yeah, so you know, we knew to expect Apple Watch and iPhone, which we were kind of braced for anyway. And then Tim Cook welcomes out Jeff Williams, who is heavily involved in watch and health. He's also is the COO, or what was his title at Apple?
Operating officer, yeah.
Yeah, COO.
Chief Operating Officer.
Yeah, so he came out on stage, and it was neat to get Kevin Lynch in the event through the video, because he's like the VP of technology or something, and you know, big on the watch. But Jeff Williams did the presentation, and showed off the Apple Watch Series 4, which we should discuss. It's what we saw in the leaks, and I was wrong about gold, stainless steel. You were right on that guess. that there is a gold stainless steel option, and that's what we saw in the leak. The watch name, we took some guesses on that. It's called Infograph, and there's also Infograph Module. So
yeah, the face, the new faces.
Yeah, the new watch face with all the complications. We also said that there were 8 complications on that watch face, not 9. And I could see how people got to 9, but in the keynote they said 8, which I thought was redeeming.
Yeah, and to just explain what they mean by that, it's because on those like center grid of 4 circular complications, the middle circular complication also controls the bezel text, which is what they call the curved text that's on the dial. So in the leak that we all kept seeing, it was calendar, right, with a date and then a calendar event on the dial. Mm-hmm. And so that is how it actually works. You can't have like weather on the dial and something else in that top middle spot. You might have weather in weather or weather in text. Like basically it gets the data from that top middle complication to display the extra text.
Yeah, some other examples I saw were like heart rate data. So you have your heart rate complication at the top, and then you have in the text field, that like almost 180 degree field, you've got like your last measurement. So, which I thought was neat. And they also showed like existing watch faces with the bottom flat complication becomes like a smile around the text, which is kind of modern. There's a small change there. But the big differences in the watch, Apple Watch Series 4, there's just 2 materials this time. So no gold, as we saw with the first generation, and no ceramic, as we saw with the second and third generation. Just aluminum and stainless steel, both collections in silver, spaced gray or spaced black, and then gold. One color of gold, one shade of gold. The new sizes are 40 millimeters and 44 millimeters, and as we discussed before, the 40 millimeter replaces 38, but the bands are still compatible. And the 44 millimeter replaces 42, but the bands are still compatible. Now, what's the measurement of this? Like, what are they measuring to get there?
So we talk about this quite laboriously on Happy Hour because we covered the KGI leaks with the with the diagonals and all of that stuff. The Apple, when Apple says 40 millimeters or 38 or whatever, they're measuring the height of the body of the entire watch as you're looking on it. Some people said that in traditional watches, case height is like what I'd call thickness, but no, they mean from basically where the band connects at the top to where the band connects at the bottom. So if you imagine an iPhone on your wrist, like you'd call that the height, right? So the physical height of both of these watches increases by 2 millimeters. So the watches are bigger marginally on the wrist. They're also slightly wider by like a millimeter each side. And then the bezel of the on the actual glass is greatly reduced, which results, I think they said, 35% bigger display on the smaller one and 32% bigger display on the bigger one. So it's dramatically bigger screen.
Yeah, it's a tweak in such a way that like even screen off, they look a little bit different, right? Like they look less boxy and more rounded.
Yeah, and we kind of touched on this when we were trying to work out what with the leaks from last week. Like the corner radius has definitely been more curved. Like they're squarer, but they're also rounded, whereas the current ones are more rectangular with less extreme curves, if that makes sense. Like they look more like a square that's curved, whereas the current watches are much closer to just like a rounded rectangle shape that's actually taller than it is wider, if that makes sense.
And they also build these as thinner, which some people perceive from the leaked image. I couldn't call that based on the image alone because it wasn't like a side-by-side comparison. It was a weird angle. We thought it could be like the iMetric. They do say it's thinner, but I would call it like slightly thinner. And if you're coming from a first-generation Apple Watch or a Series 1, it's not thinner. It's thicker.
Yeah, so if you want the measurements, the Series 3 is 11.4 millimeters and the Series 4 is 10.7, and so obviously it's down, but it's still less than a millimeter. And then the Series 0 first generation, whatever you want to call the original watch, that was like 10.4 10.5, so it's slightly thicker than the original watch.
And I think a lot of people, this might be their first watch, which there's no change there as the first watch, but if you have the first gen and you go to Series 4, like, that's probably a pretty popular upgrade path, or even Series 1, because Apple sold Series 1 since the Series 2 up until yesterday, and now it's gone. But
And I'll say this. I went from Series first gen to Series 3, and that was like a millimeter bigger, right?
Yeah.
I noticed it for sure. Like, it felt worse.
Yeah, I went from Series first generation to Series 2 to Series 3, like the path that Apple released new watches in. And every year there was a gradual change, so it wasn't as dramatic for me. So I wonder if I'll appreciate this being thinner. Maybe, but we'll see. And then the next thing, like we saw in the leaked image, that there was one microphone in between the digital crown and the side button on the right side. And on the current watches, at least the Series 3, there's two microphones. And we thought, well, maybe there's another one on the other side. Like the two are still there and the speakers are unchanged. But it turns out they redesigned the speakers. They're like two vertical slits on the side. Like they're much bigger. And they're saying that they're much louder as well. And then the microphone is now just one microphone in between the crown and the side button. And they mentioned that it's to reduce echo, which I didn't have a problem with before, but maybe with the louder speakers, it would be a problem. But I'm really curious. Like, I felt like the Series 3 was louder, and I turned the volume all the way up in the settings. I'm really excited about this speaker change. Like, if it's much louder than what it already was, then it should be pretty good. And it makes me wonder, like, if in the future they should allow you to do things like play music or at least podcasts from the watch without Bluetooth audio attached. Like, if they're that much better. Like, it'll be good for phone calls, and they mentioned walkie-talkie. And I had a thing over the summer where I was at a water park, and I was testing walkie-talkie with you, and I could not hear what you were saying, like, within the ambient noise of the water park and people around. So now I've got to go to a water park and, like, test this again with a new watch and see if it's better. But I kind of think, like, they should let you do audio from the watch just like they do from the phone if it's that much better.
Yeah, I think, obviously, they want to push you towards, like, wireless headphones, AirPods, whatever, for the music stuff.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing, like, continuously playing sound, it's kind of weird if you're walking around because your watch is always moving. Like, it's like the iPhone's got a pretty good speaker, but you wouldn't put it in like your chest pocket and just let it play music, because as you move the sound starts like wiggling around. Like, it doesn't, you need that stability on it, I think, for it to actually sound good. Like, I mean, short clips, sure, but I don't think that, like, it sounds better, but then it sounds good in theory, like, oh, you can just play music straight out of the wrist, but I don't think realistically you'd ever really use it.
Yeah, I just picture like riding a bike and having, you know, not using headphones for safety. Like, you've got your environment fully around you, but then playing, like, some talk radio or something, like, it's a podcast on your wrist. And in that case, your arms are probably stationary as you're, like, steering the bike. That's what I imagine. But
yeah, maybe.
Yep. The next thing is that the crown is different, which we saw from the leak that the red circle had become a red ring on LTE watches. And then I think on non-LTE watches now, it's just a black ring.
Yes. Yeah. Which I am thrilled about, because I will be buying non-cellular again, because the carrier, they have added another carrier this year for the UK, but not nice. Enough. So they've got one more carrier in the UK at the moment for watch, but not. So now they're up to two total, and there's like seven main ones. Of course, the one I don't want isn't on there. So I'll be buying non-cellular, and the black outline ring is way better than the red outline ring, which is way better than Series 3 red dot. So I'm happy on this trajectory.
And can you tell on the steel ones, like, if is the bit in the center on the silver steel ones, is that silver too, or is it white?
I think it's silver. I'm pretty sure it's the same material within, like, the plastic, either red or black outline on it.
Yeah, because on the space black models, it's like, you know, black or red. Well, I guess there's only a red ring because it's space black is only steel with LTE. But it looks like it's like a black inner, but then on the silver ones, I can't tell. Not the way until I see them in person, or we'll look for some hands-on videos or pictures. But yeah, that's a nice change. And then they added haptics to the crown. One of the rumors, which I think came from Fast Company, was that the buttons were going to be solid state, and that didn't pan out. But it probably came from this change, which is that the crown adds haptic feedback when you're scrolling through a list, like in the podcast or music app, and you see the different tiles go by, you get a little bit of a pushback, which is like, you know, feels like you're flicking through the album art.
Yeah, kind of like an iPod old jog wheel where it'd be like, click, yeah. Click. I think the best analogy is on the iPhone when you have a list on the iPhone and like the, not like a table, but the little like reels lists, they do a little click 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 on the haptic and on the haptic engine as you
like flash through.
So I'm assuming that's what this feels like as well. Obviously neither of us are there, so we haven't actually handled them, but I think that's what they mean by haptic, because it's definitely not like haptic buttons, because you can still, it still physically presses on both the side button and the crown.
Yeah, which answers the question of how do you do a turn it on or do a reset. Like, there's no change there. It's the same. And you can already, like, if you go to, like, the top of a list, you get, like, a bump to say, like, that's it. But I feel like this is a different, like, it's more precise with the crown, maybe, than not, like,
your yeah, and it'll be, top. Like, because the bonk is just kind of like a prominent vibrate more than anything. Like, the way they made it sounded is it would be more localized to the crown area, and it would be more of, like, a little... rather than just a bump, you know, when you hit the end.
Yeah. So, you know, new crown. The next thing is that the back of the watch, which we could not see from the leaked image that we had, is that the whole back of it looks different now. And there was a KGI report a few days ago that said that all the new watches would use a ceramic glass on the back, which they were pretty close to the year before. Like with the Series 3, all the LTE watches had the ceramic glass back. But then the non-LTE aluminum ones did not. And in previous years, it was aluminum had, like, I guess, Ionex glass back, and then still had ceramic.
I actually tweeted that, but I was wrong. Someone corrected me. The Series 2 all had ceramic backs.
Ah, okay.
And then Series 3, they brought back Ionex again.
I gotcha, yeah. Somehow it made my watch go off just now just from existing, so.
Classic. Good old race to speak.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. So it isn't just the glass change, though. It's like the whole back of the case. A lot of what used to be aluminum or steel or, I guess, ceramic or gold is now this ceramic glass. Like, it's more than just the round part of the sensor, right? It's now much of the back of it is this ceramic material, right?
Yeah, they said it was fully made out of sapphire and ceramic.
Okay, so
yeah, whatever that means, but it they've gone from like this thing where you had, you know, three or four lights, like two and two, into just this one circle in the middle with then this kind of like pentagon of little metal strips around it, and then it kind of bulges out from there. It kind of reminds me of like HAL 9000, except it's not red. Sure. it's just gray. I think it looks really cool, but it's definitely something that I wasn't expecting to see like that.
Yeah, it does look cool. It's I can't wait to see this stuff. And they mentioned that it's better for it improves radio waves can pass through the back of it now, not just the front, which in turn helps LTE connectivity. So they say that you get better connectivity with LTE because of this change. And I've not had any issues on the Series 3 with using LTE. Like, I've never had missed calls or like missed messages or like, you know, a problem staying connected on LTE before. Like, you can flip up Control Center and see if you're on the network or not, and like which network if you're on Wi-Fi. But I've never had an issue with that before. But any improvement I'll take. And then there are some new watch faces. So in terms of like the new design, like the big screen and the leaked watch face that is called Infograph. You can do a lot of customization to that to make it look like four or five different kind of watch faces. Like, they showed what we saw in the leak, plus they showed putting your friends on your watch face, like photos of your friends is like a tap to connect, which I guess goes to like messages or something. I don't know what it goes to, but we'll see. But it's almost like the friends circle with the side button initially.
Yeah, it's definitely a throwback to that.
Yeah, put on your watch face. So I expect you to put me on your watch face, Mayo, when you get this
one. I will not be putting any pictures of anybody or humans, dogs, or anything. I like the monochromatic with the accents. Real photos and pals.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so they show that. They show what we saw. They show one with just, like, a lot of, you know, workout and health complications. They show one with, like, world clocks around the dial.
The world clock one looks really cool. Like, it's two black clocks, two white clocks on the image. Well, obviously they'll change black and white depending on whether it's nighttime or daytime. And they got nice little shadows on the tiny little hands. Like, the world clock one's really cool. And this is kind of what we were kind of like jostling around when we were discussing it last week, is whether the four complications in the middle are just like normal complication zones, or if they're more, you know, like grouped together in some way. And that essentially is what happens, right? Because you've got these kind of four different modes for that center thing. Like, if you go on world clock mode, you get a different style for the centering. Like, it goes white rather than just gray. And it's not just like four disparate complication zones necessarily. There's like these modes, whether it's pictures of people or the clocks or, you know, like the activity type thing.
I didn't pick up that as being limitations. So you don't think that you could do a person, a world clock, activity, and then like something else?
That is my impression.
Okay,
because I think on the face that we've seen, like just the plain black one with the four complications.
Yeah,
I think on that one you can put whatever you want there. But I thought like the one with the circular back was like actually a fix. Like you have to have people, or like the world clock one, you have to have four world clocks.
It struck me that they were all infograph, and that the background color was like on Chronograph, where you can change it to look like antique white or gray or navy or black. We'll see, I guess, in a week and a half or so. And we also saw new complications. Like not only did they have the temperature with high and low and the UV index with the range and the current, what it is, they also showed air quality, which is a new measurement in iOS 12 and watchOS 5 for in weather. And then they also showed one of my favorites was your activity rings with the numbers. So, you know, all three colors, the red, blue, and green, you know, colors to indicate move, exercise, and stand. And then also the number. And it's like that's really good because I like the rings themselves. But then also the number is really good for me to have. Like seeing the ring and knowing, I guess, like, if I got this stand hour, sometimes it's hard to tell. But with a number, I can immediately recognize that it changed from what it was.
And it's color-coded. So the stand is blue and the ones are red.
So they're doing a lot of information there in a very small space. And it looks really cool on the new watch faces because it goes, you know, corner to corner, really.
And they call these, like, progress bar ring thingies, they call them gorges, like G-U-A-G-E-S.
Gauge,
like on a car gorge, gauge, gorge, whatever. The gauges, and on the infograph one, they're curved into the corners, and then on the infograph modular, which I believe just straight it replaces the old modular. Like I don't think you can have the old, like it literally is just they've changed the name slightly and replaced it with it. The gorges, gauges become like semicircles on the bottom three rows, so you get like the same kind of information. With like the rainbow and then the number in the middle and a little label below, whether you're on the modular one or on the analog face.
Yeah, the infograph modular, like I can see myself using that one too because you can put a lot of information on it. But the activity complication in the center shows the graph and the numbers, and that looks so good to me. Like the graphical like. Tick marks for each stand hour that you have. You know, you move throughout the day, like, you know, it shows kind of how much throughout the day and say for exercise. Like, I could see myself using that because right now I use Activity Digital a lot because it shows the rings and the number. You could do the rings as like another complication. You don't get the rings on that, but you do get the graph and the number. And I think that graph looks so neat. Like, I could see myself using that face for a while.
And from a developer perspective, that graph on the infograph modular is a new type of complication, which is just arbitrary image. Like, you can draw anything that could be an image, you could draw there and it'll, you know, update on regular complication update cycles.
Yeah, they showed MLB, I think, and they showed maybe a weather app or something.
Oh, they had LifeSum as well, which did, like, fat, calories, starch, like they little like tiny little graphs of those. So
yeah, so you track your food on your iPhone and it shows you your nutritional information on your watch face through LifeSum.
Very cool. Like there's a lot of flexibility there to actually, because like we described before, a lot of the complication templates are just like a color or an icon, whereas this one's a bigger space and you can draw any graph you want in there, whereas before the modular face was restricted to like text in that middle bit, just text, like lines of text, and now you can mix and match like a text with a graphic of some description, whether it's actually a picture or whether it's like a graph or a chart.
I was really, really happy with that. And then infograph and infograph modular are only on the series 4, which is like the new exclusive to the new watch face, new screen design. But we also got some other watch faces that are on the new series 4 and look best there, but they're also on anything with watchOS 5, I believe, so series 1 through 3 as well. And those are Vapor, Fire and Water, Liquid Metal, and then a new Breathe watch face, which launches the Breathe app for collecting mindful minutes and meditation. And it's got like three modes. And you can put complications on these. I've tried it on my Series 3. You can do like two in the top corners and then like one in the bottom is like a long one. And you can change between like the fire and water, or you can show fire or water or both, I believe. Like you can play with these. I just don't think they look great on the older watches. The breathe one looks fine. Like the breathe one could have existed any time. But the other ones I think are best on the new watch face, especially to demo at least.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, because on the new one, those three, not breathe, they feel the full width of the canvas of the new screen, so like the rounded rectangle, and they even point out how like the bubbles and the water, like it knows that they're in that canvas size, so the pre-rendered videos, like they bounce off the edges and stuff.
Yeah.
On the Series 3 and earlier, they're just similar concept, but it's just done in a dial circular shape. So you lose a lot of the impact of it being like full screen boom. I think even on the older ones, they could have just done it full screen and just, because they have other faces, right, that show the corners of the old display. So I think they could have done that here, and it probably would have been better than masking everything to a small circular shape.
Yeah, I think if you did that and you faked the corners like you do in other apps, then it would have been okay.
Yeah, like I think they're pretty clever, because like with the fire one, you have little spokes on the dial when the fire like dives in between, almost like artificial wood and stuff, and they default to having no complications turned on, which I think is interesting, because a lot of the other faces always default to having at least something, one of them already enabled. I don't know if I would use them long term. Like they feel in the same class as like Pride or Toy Story, like that kind of novelty side of thing, but maybe on the newer faces they're more compelling.
Yeah,
and on the newer watch they're more compelling.
Yeah, they remind me of like Kaleidoscope, how it's like visual, yeah, candy, like eye candy, but you know, functionally, like you're not getting as much out of it. It's like the opposite end of the spectrum from like the Siri Watch face, which is like visually, you know, nothing to brag about, but it's, you know, smart. So new watch faces in watchOS 5 on older watches. You know, that's a surprise. And if you have the iOS 12 GM. And the watchOS 5 GM that was released on Wednesday afternoon, you can already use these on your current devices if they're on the new stuff. So everyone but the first generation Apple Watch can get these. Next thing is the heart rate alert. You used to have one for high heart rate. That's existed. That's still around. And now they've added low heart rate alert. So a low heart rate is good, but too low in the wrong circumstances, I guess, is bad. And so now they'll tell you if that's the case, right?
Yep, and that's on Series 3, which is what I've got, and on Series 4 at least. I don't know if it goes back even further than that.
Right.
But that's for, like, if you're going to pass out, I think, then your heart rate often drops. So yeah, you can get a little buzz for that.
Yeah. We get the S4 chip, which is 64 bit, which, you know, Macs have been 64 bit for ages, iPads and iPhones, iPhone with the Switch with the 5S ages ago. It didn't occur to me until recently that the watch was a 32 bit processor. And we got a tip that this would be 64 bit a few days ago. Turned out to be correct. Dual core CPU, like this, I think the Series 2 and on were dual core. Got a new GPU. What is this bit that's going around that it's 64-bit processor, but that the pointers are 32-bit? Do you know what that means?
Yeah, I know what it's not worth describing. It doesn't – just ignore it, because it's very in the weeds technical, and it makes very little – like 64-bit as a name makes very little impact on usage for a customer, really. Like the reason they've done the 32-bit pointer in 64-bit is because of less memory, so it's like some memory trickery. Like it's not important. The headline is it's two times faster, up to two times faster and stuff. So that'll be nice. The 64-bit is like a marketing tagline more than anything. Like, it could be 32-bit and two times faster. Like, the 64-bit is kind of irrelevant, really. Although it is nice for some apps. Well, the problem is, if the watch platform was as capable as the iPhone, you could say, well, it's nice that they're both on the same platform so they can share all the code. But the very, like, because the watch is so stripped down, you're never going to share code with the iPhone, like the UI code, like the really advanced stuff anyway, so it's kind of irrelevant.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Udemy. Udemy offers over 60,000 online courses on a variety of fresh topics, so you can learn anything on your schedule. Udemy is the largest and most accessible online learning marketplace, with the most courses, teachers, and opportunities for students everywhere around the globe. Udemy offers courses on a range of topics, including brand new lectures and classes on iOS 12 and Xcode 10, learning to develop apps with Swift 5, and even courses on how to shoot better photos from your iPhone with updates specifically for iOS 12 before it's even public. And even though Udemy has a wealth of knowledge about technology topics, Udemy has teachers with expertise in a wide range of areas. For example, I've been brushing up on a nutrition masterclass to learn more about meal planning and healthy eating, which includes over 3.5 hours of video, and I've got courses on music production and photography queued up after that. The best part about Udemy is how it fully embraces technology. You can view courses on your Mac, iPhone, or iPad. View course content by section and complete quizzes as you learn, access a Q&A section between other students and instructors, and even bookmark specific sections in the videos just by pressing the B key. So check out Udemy and learn how to improve your skills today. Go to ude.my/happyhour right now and get 90% off when you sign up for classes. You'll not find better prices, so sign up for classes now using our link, ude.my/happyhour, and get access to life-changing classes for 90% off. And make sure to download Udemy's app for your iPhone so you can stream your studies wherever you go. That's ude.my/happyhour, ude.my/happyhour. Thanks to Udemy for sponsoring the show.
All of the Series 4 have 16 gigs of storage, which is an improvement over Series 3, where the non-cellular ones only have 8 gigabytes of storage, like mine.
Right.
And somebody found that they have actually increased the RAM on the watches, and obviously Apple doesn't talk about RAM on anything, but the Series 3 watches had 768 megs of RAM, and now that's been bumped up to a gigabyte, so more RAM. Woo!
Yeah, I saw on Wikipedia that it was like 512, I think like 768, it's like some, it's like some non-common number that you see.
It's 512 plus 256, that's where 768 comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
But so, yeah, it was pretty weird.
Yeah. So, hey, more RAM. that's cool. The next thing that I think, like, you think about this is like a sports watch or a fitness watch. Like, they mentioned that the accelerometer and the gyroscope are improved. And that just has to improve, like, the accuracy of all of the workout stuff. But they're also doing fall detection now, which, like, number of times fallen has been a metric in the health app forever. But it's always been that you need to manually enter that, and which is, like, useful if you're, like, tracking health yourself or for someone else, I guess. But it's never been automated before. And now the watch can detect that if you fall on it. It's pretty clever because they've worked out the hand motions of – like a stumble forward where your hands try to catch yourself, or a slip backwards where your hands like go up in the air, like, you know, it's like, it's just neat to see, you know, kind of the thinking behind how do you detect a fall versus like something else. And they've got it figured out. And they didn't say it, but I assume that if it detects a fall, it'll also like show up in the health app on the iPhone, which is pretty interesting to me. They do a thing where if you fall and you're immobile for like what, a minute, it will call emergency services and I think send your location to your emergency contact.
Yeah,
right.
Yep. Yeah. Like, if you are unconscious after a minute, it's going to do it automatically. And if you fall and it thinks you've just fallen, it'll immediately show you the emergency SOS slider, so you can call emergency service, you know, immediately, not have to wait a minute if you're actually there. Obviously, if you fall and it detects incorrectly, you can just press cancel. So
yeah,
that's really well done. I always struggle to work out, like, if you're in a store as a normal customer, are you like gripped by fall detection as a thing? Because ideally, you know, a healthy person would never see this ever, right? Like, because the average person never falls over, really. Like, yeah. It's rare, like, and as you get older, obviously falling becomes more problematic.
Right.
I'm not sure. I can't work it out. Would you buy an Apple Watch for somebody, for like one of your grandparents or something? Because now it can call you if they fall over. Like, I don't know.
Well, so there's a product that has existed for a long time called, I think it's like Life Alert, and there's a commercial that's like comical in how it's portrayed, but it's like, help, I've fallen, I can't get up. And it's the whole, like, the advertisement is like fear of a relative falling and like being stranded for like several hours or days. And they can't reach the phone, so they wear this Life Alert thing on their neck, which like you pay a subscription for, and then like the service, you press the button, and then they call, you know, emergency services for you. This like can replace that. And in the right circumstances, like if you're on Wi-Fi or LTE, like you're always connected. And so it doesn't matter like where you are, you get to benefit from this. The feature being fall detection, the benefit being like peace of mind is how I would see this like pitch in a store. And for someone like young and healthy, it could be, you know, what if you're like on a jog or a bike ride and you fall and you pass out? Like, you know, sure, then this can help you. Like, even if it's like a hit and run, like you're jogging and a car clips you and like you fall in the ditch and you know, you're unconscious. Like, that's scary to think about. So this is a better fitness watch now because of it. And then the other thing is like, you know, not if you're an older person buying the watch for yourself, but like if you're someone our age buying it for like your mom or your grandmother, you know, whatever, then even if they don't want this or think they need it, like it could be peace of mind for the relative, you know.
Sure.
But then absolutely, like if you know, if you're older and like you're into technology, I think that's like a smaller category, like of this being appealing to you. But I can definitely see it being like in an Apple store, it's like a salesman saying, "Look, you know, if you buy this for a family member, like this is a feature that the benefit is peace of mind, you know, that you'd have."
Yeah, I can accept that. Like, it's just, it's interesting that even some of this heart rate stuff that we're going to get to in a second, like, so much of that is those things that ideally you'd never see, but, you know, the product is better because it can be there if it needs to be. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, totally, yeah.
It's not like, oh, now you can take pictures on your wrist, like, but when you get into an emergency, we can help you. Like, it's a different, like, spectrum compared to, like, phone features.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like insurance, right? Like you never need it, but you know, just for some people, it's going to be a benefit, and some people they won't care. Like, you know, you think you're never going to need it, and so you use it for all the other features that it has. On the topic of like heart rate stuff, like those high heart rate alerts that people, you know, say have saved their lives in different circumstances, like that's been a great marketing campaign for the watch. Like, without Apple running a commercial, just the stories, because like, you know, all over the world, like local news will report that stuff of like the watch saved my life, and like people will tell the stories and they become, you know, passionate about the watch, and like, so you have to have one, and people, you know, buy into it, and because it's not made up, like it's real stuff. So I think it's one more thing, and it like zooming out, I just feel like anything that's in the health app as a metric that you have to put in manually is up for grabs, like in some future version of, you know, of the hardware, which I love to see, like because Times Fallen has been in the health app all along. And now Apple.
Yeah, I mean, the health app's got loads of categories from all sorts of random vitamins and everything. Like,
yeah,
it's got it's got sleep tracking ability in there from day one. It had mindfulness in there for a while before they even had like the Breathe app and stuff. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff there they could fill out.
Yeah, so whether it's the watch or something else, like it's all up for grabs for Apple having a product that can fill it in. It's like a roadmap in that way. The next thing is the electrocardiogram stuff that was rumored, like, I guess only recently. KG or Ming-Chi Kuo of TF Securities, former KGI Securities, said this is going to happen, and it wasn't even clear of like how Apple will describe it, because Kuo had been saying improved heart rate sensor for a while, and then he said you know, ECG built in, but it still wasn't clear like, will Apple describe it that way? Would that require FDA approval? And we've known that Apple was in this program where you can fast track FDA approval, and we'll get to that, the use of that this time to release a product in the U.S. as FDA approved. But the Apple Watch cleverly becomes an electrocardiogram in the U.S. at least.
Yeah, yeah. So the way it works is they have little electrodes on that redesigned back crystal and the crown. So if you want to take an ECG, you just put a finger on the crown, and then the skin contact comes from underneath the wrist on your other hand, and you go into the heart rate app and you wait 30 seconds, and then it gives you a report. And apparently a sinus rhythm means you're fine, and then an AFib, atrial fibrillation, means you probably need to go and get like a second opinion from a doctor, and there might be a problem.
Yeah, and they, like, for a few things here, like the animation in the ECG app looks great. Like, and they called it out on stage of like, just look how nice that looks. And usually health products are scary. And like, do you think people are actually going to want to use this? I think that's true. Another thing is that, you know, things like the Cardioband add-on Apple Watch band, like those are expensive and require a monthly subscription to use. So, like, the barrier there was lower than like a standalone medical device, but still not like Apple Watch level. And with this, there's not going to be a subscription. It's built into every Series 4 watch, regardless of what band you use. And I think it's awesome. Like, the people that have the high heart rate alerts, they go to a doctor and they find out you have an irregular heart rate, you know, this is what they then do. They say you need to go to a hospital and have an ECG measurement. In this case, the watch can do it. Goes to the health app, can save it as a PDF and share it with your doctor. They even showed like that on the iPad. There's no health app for the iPad, but they showed the PDF in detail on the iPad, which is kind of a tease. But this is neat. Like, it's one of those things like fall detection where hopefully you never need it, but you know, we'll try it out just to like try out the app. But for those that do, it's something else. Like the people that I've written, you know, stories about that have high heart rate detected, go to a hospital and find out they have a medical condition that needs treated. This is the next thing that they want for peace of mind. It's like, now I need the Cardioband, you know, but now you won't need it, at least in the US. So making progress.
Or you suppose they won't need it. Like Apple said on stage that it's the first ECG product offered over the counter directly to consumers.
Yeah.
If you look into the, because the FDA released a report on this, as they do with all the watch products, it got, It's very complicated terminology. It got FDA clearance, not FDA approval, which apparently is semantically different in that clearance means it's similar to something that already exists, whereas approval means it's something different. So they kind of piggyback off the certification of the similar class of product, like the band, for instance. So whereas an approval process would mean a more rigorous thing because it's actually like brand new rather than just bringing something into a different form factor, I think. Roughly, that's how it was. And they have, obviously, it's as the medical institute, they have loads and loads of, like, you know, look out for this. Like, it's only rated if you're over 22 years old and you have to be still and you just, it doesn't make up for a real ECG, you know, all of that, you know, stuff. But the high level is like, this is useful, right?
Yeah. I think they said it's similar to a lead one ECG. So they kind of gave some context there. But,
and it would work, not the ECG, but the optical sensor that's improved will actually do AFib detection in the background when you're not doing anything as well. So that's something that the current watches don't do. They do the elevated heart rate stuff in the background. But even if you're not physically sitting there for 30 seconds to do a scan, if in certain situations the watch can just by itself do an AFib test over like a minute or so and obviously pop an alert if there's a problem it detects.
Yeah, and they've done this heart rate study, the Apple heart rate study, through the Apple Watch with, I think, Stanford Medical. And that's not finished yet. Like they wrapped up testing, but I think like they've not reported anything back from it yet. But you have to imagine that like all of that was instrumental in part in making this come to market. So, you know, neat stuff. And they tease out, you know, that won't be available at launch in the U.S. where it will be limited to, but it'll be part of when they say watchOS 5.1 and iOS 12.1 and fine print on the slide.
That's what it said on the slide, yeah. Who knows how long it will take to come to other countries because medical approval processes are very slow. Like, I hope it comes before the time of the next watch generation, but I wouldn't guarantee it by any means.
Yeah. And then in terms of the color options, again, we mentioned at the top of the show, you've got the aluminum, silver, gold, and space gray. And then you've got, in the stainless steel category, polished silver, space black, which has existed before, and then the new gold stainless steel, which, I mean, at a glance, like, could you tell the difference in that and the additions that were gold? Like, I think the shade of gold is different, but in terms of them, you know, three generations later, that's a big change from the first generation of watches. So
yeah, and I mean, we said this on the show, like when they originally ditched the editions, it was like they could have done something. They didn't have to go full 18 karat gold to get that like nice gold finish. They could have just had like a steel watch and then just coated the outside in a very thin layer of gold. I remember us saying about it, and then they could bring the price to like 1,000, 2,000. This is kind of the same thing, but bring the price even lower, right? Like, I don't think people will really care at the end of the day if it's actually gold. Like, if it looks gold, it's good enough. And then you can have like a gold bracelet or something else if you, you know, and it will match close enough to that, I think, for the vast majority of people that, you know, don't care about the intricacies of jewelry, really. Like, I think it's really good. And I wouldn't get gold because it's just not my thing, but I do think it looks really nice, especially paired with their new golder, like, Milanese band and stuff. Like,
yeah,
it looks good.
Yeah, they didn't do a gold link bracelet, and the link bracelet has not been sold with a watch for a while now. You can buy it separately. And now on the website, like, it's hard to find. You've got to go to the Series 4 bands, go to the bottom, go to the Series 3 bands, and then it's advertised as 38 and 42 millimeter, but 38 works with 40, and 42 works with 44. And they even showed at the event in the dimmer area the Series 4 watches with the link bracelets. So it's like, it will definitely work and looks fine. Like, there's no difference in how it looks. They're just not selling it. Like, I think the price is like $450 and $550 or so, like, for the silver and space black. There's no gold version. Only like Beyonce and some like French designer has the actual gold link bracelet that was like given away in the promotional phase of Apple Watch and for the first generation. So if you want a gold link bracelet, you've got to be one of those two people, I guess.
I tell you what, buying watch bands on the Apple Store now is a lot more complicated because obviously now they've got two new sizes, but they're backwards compatible. That also means the older bands are compatible with the, because always, like, you couldn't buy a 38 millimeter band and use it on 42. So likewise, you can't buy a 38 millimeter band and use it on
44.
Yeah. So if you had a 42 millimeter before, you can't use it on the new 40. So you have to keep that in mind. But also, if you go onto the band's website, they have listings for most of the bands listed as Series 4 bands and as Series 3 bands. And depending on which way you get to the same place, it says different things in the small print, like designed for Apple Watch Series 4, compatible with all generations of Apple Watch. Yeah. Or if you go from the other direction, it says designed for Apple Watch Series 3, compatible with Apple Watch Series 4. And I haven't worked this out entirely, but I don't think there's any difference between either of them. They're just branded differently with different packaging on them.
Right, exactly. That's my take as well. They've brought back the modern buckle that is a leather with a big clasp. And I remember when it went away, like 1-3 was the watch shape will change, and so maybe the buckle will change. I've not seen if that actually happened or not. It was a fun theory. But those are only for the now 40 millimeter. They were always only for the 38, the smaller version. They're still only for the smaller version, and they fit 38 and 40. But they've got some new leather colors there. They've gotten rid of classic buckle, which has been around from day one, which I'm surprised about because like those are just like the default like leather bands. I had one. I've still got the black leather one from the first generation watch. But they're gone. You've got to get an Hermes leather band if you want like a basic leather strap or a third party option, I guess. And then they've gotten rid of all of the, like, the woven nylon bands for now. And I just have to imagine that like those just come back in like, you know, 6 months or a year or so. And the only other thing that kind of stands out to me is that the Nike version of the Sport Loops is now reflective material, so that's useful for nighttime running.
The new headline: reflective nylon saved my life.
Indeed. I wish that they had like for the gold, the new silver or stainless steel gold bands, or even like the aluminum ones, you know, an option to buy more sport bands than like the one that they offer with it. You know, so. But I guess they're not going to do that. So, oh well.
Also,
that,
the new like Hermes watch faces are pretty cool, and
yeah,
again, they're still exclusive to Hermes. Like now on the Series 4, they do like a two tone like split down the diagonal type effect. Like
depending on time of day, it goes by the by the hour hand. It's like where it splits, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean that's day. I'd consider that, but I don't want to buy the Hermes bands. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, it's whimsy, right?
Yeah, if they did sell the watch face separately, I'd buy it. But I'm not going to buy the wait the extra time because the Hermes launch is later and buy the band that I just end up reselling. Like,
I think Hermes launches on day one this time. And you get the leather band and you get the exclusive orange sport Hermes band with the Hermes like seal on the clasp. So if you want an orange sport band, like, that's the only way to do it.
The Nike ones launch later.
Yeah, Nike always, they started with Series 2, but it's always launched in October, like later than the September release. And my only guess is that it's just to get the app updated, but like, couldn't they do that before? But it's October 5th instead of September 21st.
Zach, as we've seen, Apple is so secretive. Nobody knows anything, including Nike.
Of all the people, like, it's Tim Cook, like, on the board, and, like, you know, it could be worked out. And I think for the Nike faces, like, the big playful thing is, like, it's, like, color, edge-to-edge color that you can change. Like, maybe you can make it black still if you wanted to. But did you see any new Nike digital face for the new watch or just the old one? I can't find a new Nike digital face. Like, just,
yeah, I didn't see a different one, no.
Yeah. And like, to me, that's always been, like, the iconic thing because, like, the Nike's font of the numbers digital and then three complications plus a flat one. It's, like, in the bottom. And that's been, like, the face that when I had a Nike watch, that's when I used. But it's just, like, stylistic. And the new one is, like, analog. And you can customize that to show more numerals, ticks around the dial. But, like, the main thing is just, like, the logo that launches the Nike Run Club app and then the color going edge to edge, like, match your band. You know, it's not exactly, like, smart. It's just, you know, it's just like visual, I guess. So and then all the prices for the Apple Watches are up, even aluminum, but including steel. So now it costs more money to get an Apple Watch than it used to.
Although the Series 3 is $279, which is cheaper than what I would guess. I was guessing that it was going to go to $299, but so it's actually gone to $279, and Series 1 is gone. So.
Yeah, Series 1 is gone. Series 2 went away when Series 3 came out. First one went away when Series 2 came out. So now the only options are Series 3 or Series 4, which is nice. Like, the lineup of watches is really good.
Yeah, like, and, I'd have any reservation recommending, like, the $279 one for Christmas to people. Like, yeah, Series 3 is still really nice.
Really? And for $279, you get GPS only, but for $379, you get LTE. So $100 more for the smaller aluminum. You get LTE for $379, so that's not bad. And those are only for aluminum watches, but I think they even kept the Nike versions of those too. But I was surprised that they kept LTE in both versions, so you can still get a Red Crown if you want a Red Crown. And then they've got non-LTE versions of the Series 4 and then LTE versions. And I guess that's, like, necessary because in so many markets you can only buy the aluminum versions because LTE are all steel or all LTE. And in markets without LTE as an option, you can only get aluminum, which is kind of disappointing. But again, they've got versions of both, which is, like, confusing. And I hope we get to a point where all watches come with LTE, where it's not like iPad. Because I see for iPad, like, you don't always need LTE built in. But for watch, I think it's a nice benefit.
Yeah, I think they need to expand the carriers out to actually make that worthwhile, because at the moment, yeah, they'd just be giving so many watches away that no one would ever activate the cellular on.
Yeah, and they mentioned that they've got, like, 30-something carriers now, which is twice the number they launched with last year. But I couldn't tell if that was, like, a big increase as of now or if it's been gradual and, like, that's where they're at. You mentioned that
they definitely added on new – they announced one new UK one, for instance, okay. So that'd be doubling. Like, yeah. they had 15 or so – you know, a few months ago, and so even going to 30 still isn't enough for, like, the rest of the world. Like, they covered the US out of the gate with Series 3, but
yeah,
internationally it's a lot more spotty.
And then these watches are available for pre-order on Friday, the September the 14th, which is, like, tonight, midnight, you know, Thursday night, midnight. Well, I guess it's not midnight. I guess it's, like, midnight in California, so it could be, like 3 a.m. or 2 a.m., depending on where you live, or
8 a.m. here, baby.
8 a.m. for you, yeah. So that's quick, and the turnaround time is 1 week in most markets. So a week later, they start arriving. So.
One more thing, I just want to slip in here. They said that they redesigned the UI for the new watches. I am slightly concerned about how the corners clip the screen because, as we said before, the rounding, the corner radius is much more severe now.
Yeah,
and I think that's going to encroach directly onto content elements, and you're going to get like echoes of circular watches that just crop to a rectangle.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to get a bit of that and I'm not sure how they're going to deal with it, because I looked at the the developer APIs last night, and there wasn't, because on the iPhone you get like safe areas inset stuff, and I don't think that stuff is built out yet on the watch. I'm a bit concerned, especially with things like, you know, the alert dialogues that pop up with like cancel and then delete, and the red delete button's red, right?
Yeah.
In a screenshot I saw, the delete button had both the left and the right edges completely curved, cropped off in a bad looking way, just because it was cropped behind where the display corners were.
Yeah.
So I'm a little hesitant about that. So they didn't really, in the demo room, they didn't seem really allowed people to look around that much. And I need to go look at the videos again, but I was a bit hesitant on that stuff. So I'm a bit wary.
Yeah. They showed on stage at least one instance of text scrolling and getting cut off at the bottom for the, where the corner is now, which is a change from being in a box, I guess. But yes, par for the course, I guess. I'm super excited about this watch. I've had every watch since the first one, since day one. Actually, it was like 2 weeks later because of the way shipping worked at the time. But I can't wait. You know, the big thing for me, I just imagine that like all the health tracking stuff is just better because of the new gyroscope, new processor. You know, it all helps out. The new heart rate sensor. But I mean, the big thing is like the screen, the way it looks.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how much better the sound is, because it's something I appreciate. I keep my sounds on and cranked all the way up. And, you know, I can't wait to try it out.
Yeah. I use 38mm watches because I have to, not because I want to. So if you can give me 35% bigger screen and close to the same size, I'm all over it.
Yep. Yep. And I'm really like, so I could sell my Series 3 with LTE, and I've got a Series 3 without LTE. I think it's a refurb that I've got I owned, and I think I'm probably not going to bother selling them. I think I'm just going to like give them to family and like upgrade some people that have older watches now, because I think, you know, Series 1, like they discontinued it, you know, that's fine. But like Series 3, like we mentioned, is a good watch still. Like, you know, it's, I want to update mine as fast as possible because like my watch will stale now. But for a lot of people, like I think a lot of people are in first gen and Series 1 still, and like Series 3 is a big jump from those earlier watches too. So I can't wait for watch season start next week. So I'm looking forward to that.
This week, 95 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Molecule, the only air purifier that actually destroys pollutants. Molecule is a complete reinvention of the air purifier, not just an improvement on existing outdated technology. It was developed by a scientist whose son suffered from asthma and who is frustrated by the fact that HEPA air purifiers don't relieve his son's symptoms. As a result, Dr. Yogi Goswami spent 20 years developing a completely new, totally effective way of removing indoor air pollutants. Dr. Goswami, a distinguished professor and the director of the Clean Energy Research Center at the University of South Florida, developed PICO, the technology behind Molecule. PICO actually destroys harmful pollutants like bacteria, viruses, mold, allergens, and airborne chemicals, instead of just collecting some of them on a filter. Molecule makes this revolutionary technology available to consumers so that others can experience the life-changing effects of clean air. Unlike HEPA filters, Molecule destroys indoor air pollutants at a molecular level, completely removing them from the air you breathe. Molecule uses photoelectrochemical oxidation, or PICO, nanotechnology to eliminate allergens, mold, bacteria, viruses, and airborne chemicals. The scientific breakthrough enables PICO to destroy pollutants 1,000 times smaller than HEPA filters can even capture. And Happy Hour listeners will appreciate this. Molecule has a clean design with a high-quality experience. Some even call it the Apple of air purifiers. Molecule doesn't just have groundbreaking technology on the inside. It creates a complete and clean air purification experience. From the materials used on the device, like its sleek, solid aluminum shell, to a streamlined filter subscription, where replacement filters arrive at your doorstep right when you need them, Molecule ensures breathing clean air is easy and seamless. Molecule introduces a breakthrough science that is finally capable of destroying air pollutants at a molecular level. Molecule's Pico technology goes beyond HEPA filtration to not just capture, but completely destroy the full spectrum of indoor air pollutants, including those 1,000 times smaller than a HEPA filter can trap. My favorite part is how breathing clean air transforms the way you sleep, particularly for those who are asthmatic or allergy sufferers. Since we're not immune to the air around us while we sleep, we're still susceptible to the allergens and pollutants in the environment. With Molecule, customers have reported feeling energized after the best sleep they've had in years. Molecule really does make a meaningful impact for asthma and allergy sufferers too. In a study of 49 allergy sufferers, Molecule's technology provided dramatic, statistically significant, sustained symptom reduction within just 1 week of use. The results have transformed lifelong allergy and asthma sufferers' lives. One customer even said that she was able to breathe through her nose for the first time in 15 years, all thanks to Molecule. So if you care about clean design and, more importantly, clean air, you should check out Molecule and see what a difference it can make for you. For $75 off your first order, visit MOLEKULE.com and enter promo code HAPPYHOUR at checkout. Again, that's molecule.com, molecule with a K, and enter happy hour, one word, at checkout to save $75 off your first order. Our thanks to Molecule for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour.
Next up in the keynote is the iPhone XS and iPhone XS Max section, and I'll let you tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, this is interesting. This is like the perfect example of an S year, I think. Like, they have gold stainless steel now, which is the new color, and it looks quite pretty on the pictures. Two sizes, obviously, as we've been talking about since last November, 5.8 inch, 6.5 inch. It comes with the new A12 chip, but confusingly doesn't have a new second name, so it doesn't have the adjective still bionic. So I think they're trying to hint there that it's the same kind of base architecture as the A11, but everything's faster. I think that's what they're going for, because with Fusion they started having like the low power efficiency cores and then like the two performance cores, and they've switched between them. With Bionic last year, they then said that they can use the efficiency cores and the power cores at the same time, and so I assume that this year it's the same kind of setup, except all of those cores are now faster.
Yeah,
I think that's what they're going for there. And they spent a lot of time talking about their brand new 6-core neural engine that can do 6.5 trillion operations per second. They kind of threw that out there, and everyone clapped, and I was a bit like, "Okay, you need to show me some substance to back this up." Because
in Slack, Rambo Guy Rambo said, "Whoa, all caps," and I said, "What? Do the next year's iPhones leak?" And he's like, "No, the." That it's like, oh, okay.
I mean, it's a big jump on the number, but what you have to remember is that the neural engine, at least last year, was only used for very specific things. So those very specific things could now be faster, but it might not impact a lot of stuff, because most processes on the phone still rely on CPU, GPU,
yeah,
things. Like, for all of Apple touts machine learning, a lot of the computer is still just plain normal and does not go through neural network optimized things. So I would be a bit hesitant on those numbers, but we'll see.
Yeah,
they said the CPU is up to 40% faster and the GPU is up to 50% faster, so those are big jumps. Obviously, again, we have to wait for real world benchmarks, etc.
Yeah, I'll say this, like, we'll judge like the whole presentation at the end of the show, but like I this was really in the weeds like for a long time in the keynote. I started to like kind of phase out.
This
chip heavy
wasn't the most gripping show for this section, I would say. Part of it is we kind of knew what was happening, right? But part of it was just even how they presented it. It was a bit like, this is quite technical for like a September consumer thing.
Yeah, I could have used more demos of like how much more shows up on Max phone than
yes,
on a regular phone versus like, yes, how good the chip is now.
And I will come back to that when we cover the 10R, because there's something interesting there. But yeah. They do the Max does, and the 10R, they do split view landscape. But interestingly, the home screen is portrait only.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that if you're in mail, you can get two columns, but if you're on the home screen, it's only portrait.
So home screen landscape's just gone as yeah. the Plus gets retired out in a few years.
Yes. And I think the reason they've done that is because Face ID does not work in multiple orientations still. So they don't want to hint at you to open it anywhere other but straight up. That makes sense to me. Like, obviously, I prefer if Face ID worked in landscape, but I can see why they don't want to encourage people to use it in a landscape way if it doesn't actually work that way.
Plus, let's be honest, like, landscape home screen was never great.
Yeah, even on the 10, I just want them to take the icons and rotate them by 90 degrees. Don't change the layout, just rotate the icons the same way they rotate the icons in the camera app. Like, the shutter button doesn't move when you rotate to landscape on the camera, just the little icons rotate by 90 degrees. Like, stay in place and twist. But I think all of that stuff is kind of, doesn't really matter anyway, because apparently we're going to get a whole new springboard next year, so that's clearly where they're going here. Speaking of Face ID, they did say it was faster. They said it's faster algorithms, which I think is an allusion to iOS 12 making it a bit quicker.
Yeah.
I mean, but they also did say that the A12 chip does have a faster secure enclave itself. So, and again, they didn't do any demos of this, so we just take them at their word that it's going to be quicker, but hopefully it'll be noticeable. I don't know. I feel like if it was super notable, so they would have done a video of example if it was something. Like, hard to know how to judge that.
When Touch ID got faster, they called it, you know, Touch ID 2 or so, and I don't recall if there was a demo or not, but, like, I feel like that's hard to demo and show, like, unless you're, like, doing, like, stopwatch, and even then, like, it's just how it feels is what's so different about it, I think. Because there was a big difference in, like, Touch ID 1 and 2, like, the speed of it all. And so maybe Face ID would be that way, but, you know, I feel like in a blind test, you could like, Pepsi challenge Touch ID. We'll see about Face ID, like, how it's changed.
Yeah. They have, this is a funny one. They said the Max has got wider stereo sound, and I'm like, yeah, the Max is bigger, so the device is wider. Like, I'm sure they mean something more sophisticated than physical size larger, but
yeah.
They said the stereo sounds better. And interestingly, this was something that we hadn't, that kind of like circulated around a bit and then died off. The IP68 water resistance, which is up from IP67 last year, and 68 means that it can actually be submerged for 2 meters up to 30 minutes. So it's not like the watches, which go down to 50 meters, but it is much more than IP67, which was just kind of like rated for little splashes, essentially.
Yeah.
So that's nice. Again, they're still not going to guarantee on a warranty or anything about those things, because they never do. But I think it's good to have that stuff if you do end up in the bad situation. It's kind of like an EKG. Like, it's nice to have, but you hope you never have to, have to use it.
Yeah.
They have 512 gigs of storage now. Just add $100 on the price, $150 on the price. They said they've got improved cameras. Again, they were very fast and loose here. They got new sensors with bigger pixels, which should bring better pictures, but the megapixels are still the same. The aperture, I believe, is still the same. They've got a true tone flash with less flicker. The front camera is twice as fast, whatever that means. And They spent a long time to talk about how the image signal processor does stuff. a lot of this seemed to just be kind of repeating what every iPhone's done for the last few years.
Like, how it works, how it makes a good
picture.
Yeah.
It was very, like, empty words, I kind of felt. Like, again, I'm sure the pictures are better, and this is stuff we'll have to wait and see, because the pictures on the stage look good.
It's the challenge of an iPhone is as great as the one that came before it. And in this case, like, the changes are gradual if you're going, like, from 10 to 10S. But if you're going from, like, an older phone, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's just hard to make an event or a compelling presentation on year-over-year changes.
Yeah, and unlike, say, the 6S where they had 3D Touch or 5S where they had Touch ID, there's nothing, like, wholly new that you can, like, point to that isn't the color or the size.
Sure, yeah.
Like, this will go down as the year that they did the really big one, like, versus adding a specific feature, I'd say.
Yeah, the S is for size and shape of steel.
They did name their new HDR algorithms called Smart HDR. They've done HDR on previous phones, but apparently this one is a lot better.
We've had dumb HDR for years now. And that was
fun, so thank God. And I will say, Google Pixel phones do really nice HDR photos, and I'm hoping that this kind of catches up to that, because the iPhone X, as good as it is, I think the Pixel 2 did better pictures. So
yeah, the photo example was a shot of someone with the sun in the background. So it's like you're taking a picture of the sun, basically, with your subject like in front of it. And that's always like the worst lighting. Like you can't use like a real camera, I think, and get a good photo like that without like accessories, I guess, and like a shade or something. But in this case, like they say you can do it now. Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, and we'll see. They also said that portrait mode was really good last year, and portrait lighting was definitely not really good last year.
That's right.
We'll wait and see. They definitely made portrait lighting better with some of the stuff in iOS 12, and so it is getting better, but, like, again, all the photo stuff, you have to kind of, like, say, yeah, great, but we have to actually wait to see meaningful examples. One thing they have got now is this depth control feature, which is basically taking the portrait mode blur and letting you change the virtual focal length to make it more blurry or less blurry. That's really cool. Again, though, that's more a software thing than a hardware thing, because you can get apps for iPhone X that almost do the same thing. And I'm sure Apple's be slightly nicer, and obviously it's integrated, so it's good. But it's not like a revolution. Phil was like really amped up about that. He was like, and we've done something incredible. Okay. And there were like whoops from the crowd. So it was a very weird tone for what I thought was a nice feature, but nothing like out of this world.
When they finally got to that part, you know, after like three days of talking about the chip, it was like, why didn't you lead with that? Like that was good.
Yeah, it was very... very, very strange. They then moved on to battery life, and they said that the 10S 5.8-inch gets 30 minutes longer than the 10, and that's obviously usage. And that means, obviously, you get even longer on standby. I think 10 battery life is fine, but I'd always take more. 30 minutes more, I'll take it. On the Mac, you get an hour and a half more than iPhone 10, and part of that's obviously just because the whole phone gets bigger, so they get more space to put a battery in. So, there you go. And then the other big thing they spent time on was dual SIM. Mm-hmm. So you get two phone numbers. When your call comes in, it will say which line the call's coming in from. So you could label them like home or work. Seems very simple. Interestingly, the way it works varies depending on region. So it's on both 10S and 10S Max as a physical SIM and an eSIM on carriers that support it, right? And they showed a graph of like 12, 15 carriers, and we'll wait to see, because I don't think the eSIM supports launching on day one either. So we have to wait to see how that rolls out. But it's definitely not going to be any carrier you can think of, because you can't actually just slide in two physical SIMs. In China, for whatever reason, you can slide in two physical SIMs. They have this new SIM tray where you put one SIM on the front and one side on the back, and it just goes in together. Like, there's not two separate slots. It's one slot and it just goes either side.
Yeah.
But that is only on the 10S Max, and it's only in China.
Yeah. And is that the one with the six total bands? Two bands on either side, and then a band on top and bottom adjacent to each other? Have you seen that image?
Yes. Isn't that on every phone, though, I think?
I'm not sure.
I think all the phones have those extra bands now.
Maybe so. For dual SIM, and then just the eSIM is just in the background the way it works. And like eSIM has been in the iPad for a while, and then it's also been in the Apple Watch is how it works. And on the iPad, at least, it's been a pain because I think you can – well, they've done Apple SIM as well too, right? Like where you can assign a carrier to it, and then some carriers like lock it.
So yeah.
It's been some weird stuff there. It is odd to me. Like the reason for China, they say, is that they can't do eSIM in China for some reason. And so then they give you the dual SIM, like physically. And it seems like in the U.S., like maybe physical SIMs would be easier too, you know, for everyone like in the U.S. and U.K. and around the world. Because eSIM's been messy in the past, but maybe it'll be better. There's a lot to work out there of like how it works. Like they showed if you get an incoming call, it'll show you like which phone number it's going to, so there's no confusion there. But like, how will iMessage work? And like, you know, I mean, I know you can always like change your SIM from manually in the settings, but like, can you do it on the fly? You know, like, there's some stuff to work out there, I think. And like, how does data work? You know?
Yeah, my take on the whole like in eSIM politics is that they want to move the iPhone to fully eSIM, right?
Then you can have six SIMs.
So in the future, there'll be no SIM tray at all. It'll be electronic.
Yeah.
But I think they're using the dual SIM internationally and in the US as a way to kind of push the carriers to it. Because the carriers have resisted it so much so that Apple has gone to the FTC and even complained that they're blocking eSIM. So by kind of giving them a physical SIM and an eSIM as a feature on top, you're kind of, you know, adding the pressure on in that direction.
The incentive is customers can pay you more if you give them a second line with eSIM. Like, it's not for free. It's not included. Like, you've got to pay for it.
Yeah, and you can have two separate carriers. And the carriers are worried that if you went fully eSIM, then there'd be a lot more turnover and people would switch instantly because you don't have the pain of actually going, talking to the cellular carriers and do all that stuff. So there are reasons why they don't like it, but obviously Apple wants to go in that direction. But then in China, I think Apple has faced the same resistance from the carriers. I don't think there's a technical reason. I just think in China, they know that dual SIM is a really compelling user feature, more so than anywhere else. So they're just going to put up with it and do the actual physical dual SIMs in China so they can sell more phones and worry about the Chinese carriers at a later time.
Yeah, this was the issue with the Apple Watch, was that there's no eSIM in China, so there's no... the watches that are cellular, there's not there in China. There's only the aluminum ones that are not cellular now, so that's a bummer. Yeah,
I think they're actually back now.
Oh, really?
That's good. In limited areas, very complicated. But they were banned for a time.
So I don't have a use for dual SIM personally, and I'm thinking like I've got a family. Like my aunt has two iPhones, her personal iPhone and her work iPhone, and she manages to keep up with both. But then for Apple Watch, like. They do a health program, a wellness program, where the Apple Watch can give you credit, you know, for your activity, and you get, you know, I guess perks at work, and it, like I said, has to go with the work phone, so it's like complicated with how that works, and so I'm curious if this is something that dual SIM could resolve, but even then it's like, how does the data get split up, and you know. How it's paid for, you know, and like
especially with the eSIM complication on the top, like I know in the UK some. Businesses will give you like a work SIM, and people with dual SIM phones just put that SIM in and then just have their own personal line as well. So they get kind of one paid for by the company and then one they pay for. But if they go into like eSIM in most of the world, it might be more complicated. Like the enterprise can't just hand you a SIM. They're going to have to do some weird registration with some electronic method. Like it's very... We have to wait and see how that plays out for sure.
Yeah, I gotta say, like, they showed some examples of like why you do dual SIM, but I'm curious if from listeners, like if you've been waiting for dual SIM since it's been rumored, and you're gonna look into this now, I'm curious like what the use case is. I think the common is like, you know, business phone that you also have your personal phone number attached to, but I'm curious on like what the specific use cases are, because for me, I'm just not informed on like the why you need this and that kind of thing, like, you know, where it's practical.
So yeah, that's, and then in between all that, they did like three protracted long demos of two games, and then this kind of cool AR app that wasn't a game for a change, where it kind of analyzed the basketball court and you could get some stats and stuff. That was cool.
Yeah,
but yeah, that was like, oh, and in between all that, they then had Lisa Jackson come out and talk about the environment and stuff. So they definitely kind of,
because these iPhones are like made more than ever from recycled parts, right? Like,
sure. Yeah.
Parts, yeah.
Yeah. And so there definitely was a lot of filler, and I've got nothing against, you know, the recycling stuff, or and they had a new presenter who did the big long talk about the chip, and I thought that presenter was really good. She was just kind of talking about a non-consumer thing, so
it was like, just Phil's bit that went so long on the chip that was like, come on, next thing.
Yeah, and then they passed it over to the woman who then did it for even longer. It was very, it was weirdly paced.
Yeah, it was weirdly paced. In writing the script for 9to5 Mac Daily yesterday, like summarizing the event, the iPhone section I relied on, looking at the website again, like what is new in this phone? Because in my mind, it's size and color. It's the bigger phone and the color gold. Like, and that's all I think most people will care about. It's hard to get into the other, because it's like battery life is like doubled. It's gone up in some cases and down in other cases. I think it's complicated, and all these different, like, it isn't like it's waterproof like the watch is now. It's more water resistant than it was before. So all these things are like gradual, and so it's complicated. But like size and color, and if you don't care about either one of those things, then it's not a compelling year. But if you're upgrading from any of the older phones in the 10, like it's an iPhone 10 plus more, like, and that's good. The thing is, like, there was a rumor that the 10s would be cost less than the 10, and that didn't happen. It's $999 and up, and then the price of the 10s Max is $1099 and up. And so it isn't like the 10 technology has gotten cheaper this year. That didn't happen. So
yeah, the 10s is no longer sold.
Yeah, exactly. So. And then the yeah, next the, thing is the iPhone XR. And all of these names came out early, including XR. You know, XS Max we had last week. XR was floated. We didn't have that confirmed, but it was you know out there. And now it's real.
Yeah. This. So we kind of been hearing these like it's aluminium size, glass back and front. I still couldn't quite, even though that's kind of what the iPhone 8 is, right? Because it has aluminium sides as well.
Yeah, and glass back.
Yeah. This looks way better than what I thought it would, and I'm not really sure why. But maybe it's just the colours are pretty. They've got six colours. That's one more. The iPhone 5C came in five colours. They're doing six colours this time. They've got white, black, product red, first time out of the gate for a new phone, blue, yellow, and then coral. And coral is like this kind of like orangey, ready color.
Yeah,
I can't tell you why. And again, we haven't seen it in person. I just think they look really nice. And the aluminium band is color tuned to the glass, but it's not matching. It's not identical,
right?
Because it's different materials, right? But I don't think that's like that's not super offensive to me because like you look on the iPhone X, the silver one, that's got like a silver chrome band and the back's like white and silver. Like it's not the same material all the way around. What do you think they look good?
I think they look great. And to think about this, like, you know, it's too bad that there's no small phone anymore. Like, even the SE went away, you know, versus being updated. But they made the case in the keynote that the 10 is like the screen size of the Plus phones, but easier to hold in your hand. Like, it's a smaller phone than that, which, you know, we know that much. It's not as wide, so it really isn't like a plus-size phone, which is why the Max exist. But in this case, like, it's a medium size, so it's still a bigger phone. Like, it's like if the iPhone 8 were to get, like, bigger, but not as big as a Plus. That's what happens with the XR, like, physically. And the fact that they don't make a new phone with the forehead and chin anymore is so good. Like, it's LCD. They call it Liquid Retina, which is just like marketing name for like how they have a retina display in this, you know, notch style with no chin and forehead. And just to think about, like, if you go and buy a new iPhone, you've got to buy an old iPhone to have an iPhone that looks old. Like, last year you could buy a new iPhone that looked old. Now you can't unless it's actually an old iPhone. And these look just like really modern and hip. And like the 5Cs were cool, but they were last year's iPhone when they were brand new. This is a better chip than the 10. It's the H12 Bionic, like the A11 Bionic. And in a lot of ways, like, it's a better phone than the 10. I would upgrade from a 10 to a 10R unless, like, you want a little bit bigger screen and color. But, I mean, it is a better phone than the 10 in a lot of ways, which is new to have red on day one and white, black, yellow, coral, blue on day one. Well, I guess it isn't day one. It's like October, but still. It's day one for this phone. It's like it's a modern phone. Like, I would totally recommend this phone to people, you know, that don't want to spend $1,000 and up on a phone.
Yeah, people are flipping out that it's that the resolution is not 1080p because it's – but the PPI is the same as the iPhone 8, 326. Yep. Like, and I would happily criticize low, bad screens. I think the iPhone 8 screen is great. Like, it's fine. It looks good. And they say this one's even better. Like, it's got even more dynamic range and stuff. And it's so they say it's better than that. And it's the same PPI. And it's the same logical resolution as the Max. It's just 2x rather than 3x. So you get the split view modes.
You can see more content on the screen than you could on a 10. It's just not
Or 10S.
Sharp. Or 10S, but it's just not as sharp, right? But it's still Retina.
Yeah. And and on the 10S, yes, it is higher PPI, but also it's AMOLED Pentile. So some people would say that you have to discount 20% of the PPI because of the way they fudge it with AMOLED layout, with the Pentile layout. So it's not even going to be that much of a sharpness difference. Like, apart from the fact it's OLED and it's LCD and not OLED, so the contrast ratio is good, this probably is a better screen than the iPhone XS, including the fact that it's slightly bigger. Like, it's very... It's very, very compelling. Like,
for and it's not a cheap phone. Like, the price, you know, we got it's $750, and it's like, that's not a budget phone. That's not a cheap phone. Like, iPhones used to be $650 and up, and this is a $750 phone. Like, I guess it's cheaper than the 8 was brand new.
Cheaper than 8 Plus. The 8 was $699.
Okay, but it's not a cheap phone at all. It's not a budget phone. Like, if you're like, I wanna get like the cheapest iPhone they make. This isn't what you go for. Like, the rest of the lineup is like 7, 7 Plus, 8, 8 Plus, and those aren't even cheap phones, but they're cheaper than this. But this is like a good entry level flagship. And I mean, I've seen people criticize like the bezel because it's not as thin as the 10 and 10S bezel is, but it's still like, compare it not to a 10, but to an 8 and 8 Plus, like. It is dramatically better than that, you know.
And personally, I think having the, like, it's about 1.5 millimeters on every side compared to a 10 more bezel. I think that having, like, equidistant bezels is a better look than what some of these LCD Android phones do, where they have thinner bezels at the top, but then a pretty substantial chin on the bottom.
Right.
And I'm sure total screen surface area is the same or about equivalent, but for me the iPhone approach definitely looks better.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you're in the market for a new iPhone, like gone from any of the older phones, then a 10R is not, like, you know, looked down upon. I don't think, like, a 10R is a new name that's a little weird. I literally think it's just that R comes before S, and so it's like a slightly step down but still sounds kind of cool. And the fact that it's actually XR to be pronounced 10R is like, it's complicated, but like the phone itself, name aside, is like a really good phone. And I would totally recommend like people upgrade from any of the bezel, like 10 and 4 headphones to this. Like,
yeah. Sure. The one friction point you kind of have is, say if you're on a 7 Plus and then you go to this, you lose the dual camera. So 2X optical zoom is gone. And then the two lens based portrait mode is gone. Now they say they're going to do portrait mode on a single lens using software algorithms and clever pixel stuff. And maybe it'll be good. I don't have much confidence given how well like the front camera on the iPhone X does, and that even has like infrared sensors around it. Let it be said, the Pixel line, the Google Pixel line, all have single camera lenses and do very, very, very good portrait mode. So maybe Apple can step it up. I'm not convinced. So I reckon the portrait mode is going to be bad. But apart from that, it is a very, very, very compelling. It doesn't have 3D touch. Amusingly, they have branded long press as haptic touch.
Because you long press and then get a push back and they call it.
Yeah, and I think what they're going for there is that it doesn't have 3D touch, but it does have a taptic engine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Whereas the iPhone SE didn't have 3D touch and it didn't have a taptic engine. So right. I think the reason they're calling it haptic touch there, they're trying to give it a brand, is that they have put the good vibration motor in it. So
have you sorted out if long press, like if you can haptic touch, I hate that we have force touch, 3D touch, and now haptic touch, but if you can do that in an area where you can also long press, or does it interfere and like you just can't do, you know, like a home screen on an icon?
Right. It works like a long press. That is it. With a vibrator at the end. So on the lock screen, if you've got the, you know, the torch on the lock screen, you long press, it haptics, you let go.
That part I get, but like, what if it's the app icon on a
right? If it's the app icon, you long press, it jiggles as a long press. You can't get into the shortcuts mode.
Ah, so that's
the quick
notable.
Actions are not there. The peek and pop is not there. Ah. Things like the trackpad keyboard is there, but only because they brought that to all the long press phones, right? With iOS 12, so you long press, you get the nice buzz, and then you get on with your day. Peek and pop, quick actions from the home screen are not there. They're just not there.
Ah, okay. Because I was wondering, like, if that conflict is there, like, how do they resolve that? But they just don't give you the peek and pop and the quick actions. And in that case, like, if you've got a 6S or later, then you lose something that you might have used before, because it seemed like, you know, the way Phil worked, you know, sold it was like, our team has developed haptic touch and it's a replacement that could, you know, bring the benefits of 3D touch everywhere without the price sensitive stuff, but I guess not.
Yeah, they were very creative with their branding on that one.
Yeah.
I don't count that on the same level as losing the dual camera, because I believe that most people don't use those features, and the people that do use those features are the people that buy 10S's, 10S Max's, not...
Well, and the dual camera is only a loss if you had a 7 Plus or 8 Plus.
Yes.
Or 10. But if you had any of the smaller phones before, the phones that start out at $650 or $699, those have always had a single camera, and you've never had portrait in that way. So now you've got a single camera, and you get portrait in some way.
Yeah, and you've got Face ID on the front, remember? So you've got all of that, and you've got portrait lighting on the front, as normal.
Yep, yep.
I have two people in my family that have iPhone 6s. I will tell them to buy this. Like, last year, they liked how the iPhone 10 looked, but it was too expensive. Easily tell them to buy this. And yes, it's not as cheap. I was hoping it would be $699. It's $750. Okay, right. It was really, really... At least it's not like $799, $899. Like, it is good entry level. Like, if they could have really got it to $699, I think it would have, like, exploded. Like, really, really exploded. But where it is, it's I think it's very competitive.
I mean, the biggest problem is that it ships in October, you know, like late October. It's like pre-orders are October the 19th, I think, and like it ships a week later, like, you know, the end of the month.
Yeah, 26th, I think it ships. And remember, it does have A12 Bionic. The rumors indicate that it only has 3 gigs of RAM compared to 4 on the 10S's.
Yeah, that's been what Quo says, at least, right?
Yeah, so, and obviously Apple doesn't never talks about RAM, so we don't know yet, but that's probably true.
Yeah.
You get slightly less RAM, you know. Yeah. It's nice on 10S, but the iPhone 10 only has 3 gigs of RAM. People don't really complain about that. So,
yeah. So, I mean, if I'm describing the iPhone this year, it's like there's a new version of the 10 called the 10S that you can now get in gold if you want that, and it's just like all, you know, it's a little bit faster. It's got some battery life improvements. And it's more water resistant. If I'm describing the 10S Max, it's the 10 but bigger. And it comes in gold if you want that. And it's more water resistant. And it's, you know, got a little bit better battery life than even the 10S does. And then the 10R is like, it's like the 10 design, a little bit bigger and way more colors. And you don't even have to talk about like the difference in like steel versus aluminum. Like, you get wireless charging, all this stuff. It's like, the big thing there is like the color. It's like, it comes in colors, and it's the style of an iPhone 10. With Face ID, and it's not $1,000. You know, it's like a fourth the cost.
Yeah, like this. I'm not a market analyst, but I would guess that the vast majority of new iPhones they sell this year is the 10R, followed by the Max, followed by the 5.8 inch one.
Yeah, you can get a 6.1 inch phone that costs less than a 5.8 inch phone with the same speed, like
newer processor, actually.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at like the X.
Oh, compared to 10S. Yeah. I was thinking, because I keep thinking like the iPhone 10 is, even though it's gone, like if you imagine that was $100 cheaper, like what they normally do, you're still winning, if you see what
I mean. Yeah, yeah. So in this case, like, the 10R is a good value for like what you're getting compared to the rest of the lineup, you know, like the fact that you can spend like what is like the top 10S Max,
I believe it's 1400. It might be more than that. It's pretty
It's high.
I think it's 1400 plus tax in US dollars, so it's pretty mental.
Yeah, you're spending like Mac money on a phone. So.
Yeah, and that's obviously for 512 gigs. So
So in this case, like I will probably order a 10S Max this evening as pre-orders go live. Probably, I can't imagine I would get gold. I like the gold. The watch. The steel is nice. I think gold steel. The glass on the gold phones, I don't love that. Like, you know, we saw it in the FCC League. We see it now. It's just like it's not quite for me. Like it had. Even if I used a case, like I think I'd just want to get the black version because the way the glass looks is just better to me. So space gray if I order one, which I probably will. And then so the last thing was like it wasn't like a one more thing, but it was like a, and by the way, HomePod, which is a thing that we sell, has been updated. We'll have an update next week.
A good update. Like, I don't know why they made it so nonchalantly. Like, for a start, they recapped AirPlay 2, which was hilarious to me because. At WWDC, AirPlay 2 was already out, so they could have talked about it then, and they just decided not to mention it at all.
Right.
Because Kim Twitt was like, recently we launched AirPlay 2. It's like, no, it didn't come out in August, it came out in June. like, hello? So they recapped AirPlay 2, but then they said, the HomePod gets lyric search, multiple timers, find my iPhone, phone calls, you can make and receive phone calls.
The receive part, that's at me, because make, I can understand, but receive is like, how does that work? You know, I'm curious.
Yeah.
Lost that bet.
And they reiterated the Siri shortcut stuff. Now, this completely matches what was in the private beta report that we had a few weeks ago. So I'm assuming that that also comes along with the Wi-Fi networking stuff, but they obviously that's more
less sexy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a keynote material, but I assume that will come as well. But for me, if you're hitting phone calls, which I'll complain about to death, and mobile timers, I will lap that up. No problem. Now, people seem to think this is coming out on Monday with iOS 12. I watched the keynote and Tim Cook doesn't mention a date for it. The press release doesn't mention a date for it, I don't think.
Okay.
I watched it twice, so I watched that particular section twice, and maybe I'm just deaf, but I didn't hear a date for the HomePod update.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I'm assuming it will come out next week.
Yeah.
And hopefully they didn't demo any of this stuff, but if mobile timers works as it should, and if phone calls works as they should, I happy bunny all around here for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to try something really fast. Let's see. Let's see if this works. Let's see. Set a timer for 5 minutes. Set a timer for 10 minutes. That's the iPhone. So on the iPhone, this is the GM of iOS 12. It can't do it. So they're just doing it on HomePod, which is like to match Echo. Which is fair. Like, you know, it would be cool if you could do it everywhere, I guess. But like, do it on the HomePod at least. People expect it.
Yeah, and I'm sure maybe next year they'll follow up with like a visual UI for the other devices like watch, obviously, or phone, and do it on there too.
Yeah, well, not bad. So we know it's not on the phone, at least in the GM of iOS 12, but it will be coming to the HomePod soon in an update. Overall, the presentation of the event, like every year I find people that complain about the event, like the way that it's presented and like how much content is in it. And obviously, like, we didn't get any Mac updates or any iPad updates or anything on AirPower. The only thing on AirPower was that on the website, the iPhone 10 page went away because the 10 goes away. And that used to say AirPower coming in 2018 with a 10 on it and the AirPods case on the watch. But the page went away because the phone went away. And the only other mention of AirPower on the website was for on the AirPods page. They would show the iPhone 10 on AirPower with the new charging case. And that would say currently unavailable. It wouldn't say coming in 2018. So the one that said 2018 went away because the iPhone 10 went away and the whole page went away. And it's not on the new 10S page. And then the AirPods page exists, but it shows a lot of old stuff too. Like it shows the 7 Plus in jet black, which is long when discontinued. It shows the Apple Watch Edition Series 2 with the black crown and white ceramic, which has been discontinued. And it shows the MacBook 12-inch with an old version because it isn't like the 2017 version that's over a year old with the control key with the pointer on it. It's an older version of that. So it's like that page doesn't really get updated often. So I don't think you can read anything into that really. And like there's so many rumors of like Quo saying it's in the supply chain. Mark Gurman saying employees have been testing it at home, AirPower, for the first time in recent months, and that they are targeting fall. I don't think he said September. So it could be an October thing and they just don't want to give a date until it's definite. Or it could be like a December 31st thing. Or it could be 2019. But there's been a lot of like talk of like speculation of like they're not going to be able to make AirPower. It's too
ambitious. People are like people are just saying they've given up. They've scrapped it.
Yeah. I don't think you just like forget it. I think you acknowledge it if that's the case, but like they had to have been somewhat close if they had working demos last year and people are using it at home. Like they've got to be somewhat close, you know, versus scrapping the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, clearly there have been problems, and
yes,
I think an Apple's ideal roadmap it would be out by now. It's not. I don't think they've given up on it entirely, and we still have to ground ourselves in the fact that they said 2018 and it's September. They've still got a couple of months left. It's awkward that it's taken more than a year. If they get it out within the year, they haven't lied. So we will see. But I think it would be shocking if they just straight up said, we're not doing it anymore. And I think if that was the true case, they would have definitely removed the picture from the website.
Yeah.
Because that picture is there, probably still on the back, but they're probably still working on it. But at this point, they probably hit so many problems that you don't want to commit to a date only to have to delay it again. Because then it just, you know, you're just laughing at them in their faces. So they're just keeping shtum until it's finally done. That's my impression, at least.
Yeah, so March 2019, AirPower. I heard it here first. Do you think there'll be an October event now?
Probably, yeah. And what tipped me over the edge is when Quo had that USB-C iPad report.
Yeah.
Because it'd be weird to do normal Lightning iPhones, which, by the way, still come with the slow power adapter, so that sucks.
Uh-huh. Which was against other predictions, yeah.
Yeah, and then Quo said that the new iPads have USB-C ports and come with the new USB-C 18-watt chargers. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, well, they're going to have to do these separately at this point. Like, at that point, they're going to have to do a lot of positioning for the USB-C on an iPad. Because it's not just a simple case of putting the port on there. It's, you put the port on there, what can you plug into it? Can you plug printers in? Can you plug, you know, speakers in? Can you plug this in? Can you plug that in? Like, there's so much. Are they going to let you plug, a USB-C, you know, like, key? Like, I can't even remember what they call them.
Like a flash drive.
Yeah, flash drive, yeah. Are they going to just let you plug a flash drive in and see a file system there? I'm not convinced. We'll see, but that will require a lot of positioning, and it pushes the iPad way more into the computer section, where it then makes it, like, synergize well with Mac announcements. So, yeah, at this point, I would definitely say there is a second event on the way. If they did the iPad and not the Macs, I would say no, they would just do the Macs as, like, press release or something, but the iPads are too good not to have an event for.
Yeah, like could I plug in my USB-C microphone into it and record, like, in the voice memos app for iPad. You know, like, we'll see about that. I think I had a timer just go off for some reason. I'm not sure, like, what the timer was for, so...
That's because you set a timer on the home, on the phone, right?
Oh, it is, yeah. Oh, man. So I've got another one coming in, like, soon. Yeah, good catching me up on that. I put him in the mystery. And judging the event, you know, like people... often say, like, this was not a good event. Like, this one, I really felt like the content, as much that leaked and wasn't included, there was still good content. Like, I mean, the fact that it's an S year for the phones is, I think, like, it's definitely an S year for the phones. It's in the name, even for the R phone, you know, it's an R year for that phone. The fact that there is a new color and two new sizes is a big deal. It's just, you know, it's not as easy to present that. And then the watch is like, there's so much there that is new and interesting that I think it was a really compelling event. They just could have, like, reshuffled how things went, like how long they talked about the chip and the cameras, and maybe, like, did more with the watch, you know, in, like, terms of, like, demos.
You said something really cool in the middle of it. You said it's like a mini WWDC when they were in the weeds of talking about all the machine learning, 9x faster, chips here, chips there, chips everywhere. And that's really what it felt like. And that should not be the tone of, like, the consumer fall event, like, at all. I think they could have made the event way better if they did a watch demo, because they never actually demoed the watch in use. They could have shown off the new complications. They could have shown off some third-party complications, just shown how the bigger screen lets you see more. Strip out some of the chip stuff, just do the demo of the basketball game thing, because I thought that was cool. I don't think you needed the game demos. And then do the iPhone XR, maybe with some slides of, look how much content you can see, look how good this is. Yep. And then maybe even do a game demo with the iPhone XR. The main thing to me is it felt like they padded the iPhone XS section a lot, and it was kind of obvious that they were just kind of trying to fill time with it. Yeah. So... for me, it was more like they extended the watch and the R sections a bit. It would have flowed a lot better. Instead, it kind of felt like we were dragging through the weeds of the XS section, which was unfortunate because I think the content was fine. The products are fine. It's definitely an S year and an S year to the max, to use that word, because there's not like a 3D touch or a Touch ID or some other or live photos, like something like that. There just isn't, right? It's bigger screen, gold. Faster, like, yeah, there you go. Even though the tagline on the Apple website is big news, it's big screen, that's what it is. So they definitely struggled with that a bit, and I think in terms of, like, polish and just terms, I thought the presenters they had were really good. They were less like just weird stumbles in speech and errors than, because last year at the iPhone X presentation I was really struck by, like, how unprepared people seemed just in how the scripts went, and they kept, like, stumbling over their words. It was much better this time around, and especially, like, Tim and Jeff were, like, so pumped. They were like, this is the best thing in the entire world. Like, it was really, they almost went over the other end of the spectrum. Just in terms of event pacing, it was off, I would say.
Yeah. It was just like you could shuffle things around and, like, reproduce the event with the same content, but like, change the order and the durations of different segments, and it would be, I think, judged better. But I mean, I'm a day later. I'm up on everything shown at the event. I'm excited about it all. Next week we won't have new stuff in hand yet, but the following week we will. Monday? iOS 12 and watchOS 5 come out. Is tvOS the same day?
Yes. Yes. And hopefully HomePod the same day as well.
Yeah, I'm on the GM for the tvOS 12 release, and there's still no screensavers for Space yet, so I'm hoping they come like over the air on the day that it comes out, but it's not part of Aerial yet, and it's not a new screensaver either, so curious about that. But Dolby Atmos has been working for weeks now. That's awesome. And then Mojave is like a week later.
The week after.
Following Monday, so that's neat. I was expecting like release on Wednesday maybe, so it's a little bit sooner than I was thinking, so that's nice. So, which we've been running the software updates like all summer long. So I guess nothing big there, but, if you haven't updated yet, there's some nice things in store for you. Anything else from the event you want to mention?
I think that just about covers it. I'm really looking forward to the watches and just experiencing the bigger screen, like on my actual wrist. Like the phones, I think are fine updates, but I don't think anyone should feel bad for not updating every single year. That's just a stupid mindset. And the iPhone X is so good. Like, even in the previous years where I didn't update the same year, I felt like I was missing out on stuff because the phone started to feel older. Like, whether it's iOS 12 or it's how good the iPhone X is, like, I don't know. The iPhone X still seems really, really, really new and fresh to me. So I'm, like, super happy with the iPhone trajectory at the moment. I expect there'll be a bigger update next year. And the watches, I've been wanting new redesign, and I feel like they delivered that in a really big way. So I'm pretty happy indeed.
Yeah, I will say with the phone, so like I said, I'll intend to order the XS Max tonight and when it arrives. But I will be in like a phase like I was when the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus came out, where like I evaluated, do I like the bigger screen, or is it like, you know, something new but not better for me? And so I'll keep my 10 around for a little bit and like decide, like, is this what I actually want, or you know, is it better in different use cases, or is it just new? And then like once that wears off, I'll actually be annoyed by the bigger size. So I'll do some evaluating there. And then on the watch, the only thing I want to add is like this year, I think the design is like the big thing, you know, for people, like how it looks. And the gold color option and the still option and the still finish. In the future, I feel like sleep tracking could be a thing and always on display. But like,
yeah, they're like the next big precipices.
Yeah, those are like the two obvious improvements in future generations. And you know, some people are like, was that mentioned this time? No, it wasn't mentioned. But I think like, you know, Series 5, Series 6, like that's where we're going from here, because you've added all the radios now. You know, the camera is like a mystery, like if they'll ever do a camera or not. For like taking photos and video calling, I guess. But you know, I think the next thing is like sleep tracking, and then like maybe always on display like a year later than that. So I'm looking forward to this though, because it's like it looks different, you know, in terms of like how you can present information. I don't think we've really seen how other watch faces look besides like the flat complications becoming rounded at the bottom. I've not seen the honeycomb yet. I've not seen control center. So there's a lot of things I'm curious about with the watch, of like how it will look on the new
screen.
There
was a quick glimpse of the dock, and it looked the same apart from they rounded the little preview tiles a lot more to match the corners of the screen. So there are little tweaks like that throughout.
Yeah. So all around, like, good event. And, you know, preface that with saying, like, we probably have another one in a few weeks. Like, the 10 hours are even out, you know. So.
Yeah, like, because it's funny, because the 10Rs, like, we'll have the event before the next iPhone comes, before the 10Rs out. Yep. So it's like, why didn't they do the iPads now as well, and even if they were coming out in October? Like, especially because then they would have even had to, you know, cut all the padding altogether, and it'd been more, like, fledged out. It's a weird decision there. Maybe it'll make sense when we actually get the next event, when we gather around for the second time.
We may end up with 4 hours of a fall event instead of just the two that we expect. So, yeah. Well, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can follow us. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You are?
I am BZA Mayo.
All right. And you can also email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And last thing I want to mention is the episode of Mac Power Users that I was on is out now. So I'll include a link in the show notes if you've missed that. I think it's relay.fm/MPU if you want to go and look for that. So we talk a little bit about wanting to buy an Apple Watch edition before the event, and some a lot also about like how workflow works, like planning for the event coverage and that kind of thing. So check that out if you're interested. And thanks for everyone who has listened and sent a nice note over. So I appreciate that. With that being said, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.